It's our brunch class, special edition of Wisdom of the Sages, with a very, very special host today, His Holiness Satchidananda Maharaj. We're here with about 45 people, Maharaj, but people will continue joining, forever. This will be posted. Some people can't come at this particular time, but people will come forever on this and check in with this link, and we're really happy to have you here. And this is an international group. And, of course, a lot of you already know Maharaj, but for those who may somehow join in a year from now and perhaps didn't hear the initial class, His Holiness Satchidananda Maharaj has been a dedicated spiritual practitioner and monk for 50 years. And he's from Germany. And he had some... I was doing the interview with Kostuba on the show the other day, and I had a power outage, and then I got cut off, so I didn't even hear all the sweet nectar that he shared. But I'm eager on the seat of my pants. It's one of my greatest desires, is to find people sincere about spiritual life, listen to them, ask them questions. Usually I do a lot of talking. This is a great chance for me to just sit down and shut up. Maharaj, welcome. You're live in Berlin, or you're outside of Berlin right now?
I am a little bit outside of Berlin, at the bank of a beautiful lake, which I can see from this position. And yes, I'm really grateful to be with you in the cyberspace.
And I had the good fortune of, you're one of the first person I met when I went to Vrindavan in 1988. And I'm happy to say I've had some type of connection with you as a to get your company over these many years. And what we're going to do today is I'm going to ask Maharaj to lead us in a type of meditation that he has. He really specializes in helping his students really go through the practice of bhakti and really refining it, which I need right now, because after so many years of doing this probably improperly, I'm probably rusty, like an old car, and I need a tune-up. And there's a lot of people new to this practice. There's a lot of people that have been in this practice even longer than me listening to the show right now. And we're all very eager. And in the meantime, I'm going to ask the students that are present on Zoom to write down any questions. It's great if you have some deep questions that you feel like maybe they're not getting answered, or our mailbox is getting stuffed at Wisdom of the Sages, and you're not getting heard. This is a great chance that you can post it up, and either me or Mara will take note of these, copy them, and then we will read them. Is that correct? Is that how we're going to do it? You want me to read the questions, Kostuba? He's out. He's like, I can't hear. Okay. So I'll read them.
I'm muted. Yeah, that sounds great to me.
If you don't mind, I'll pick them off the board and I'll read them.
But I think people should be able to meditate first and then maybe write their questions. So they can focus on the meditation.
You might get a question that comes to that meditation.
Boom. Okay. Laura Rubino, I didn't even know this, but she's saying that it's World Meditation Day today.
What?
Wow.
It's World Meditation Day? Who comes up with these? Is there someone, Swami, that just makes it up? Can anybody just make up a day? Or is that like is this like on the calendar, like an ancient calendar, World Meditation Day?
I don't know.
Okay. Maharaj, welcome.
Thank you.
Please guide us. We are a bunch of farm animals. Lead us, shepherd us somewhere good.
Thank you so much for you're always so lively present. Your words are spiced with wisdom and with jokes. So that's a good combination to reach the heart. Yes, I would like to greet everyone who is now on the call and like to give you a spiritual experience today, an experience which will hopefully motivate you to go further in your private time outside the immediate call. I guess meditation is something which we all have experienced from time to time. We have done it. And we have seen the benefit For me personally, meditation is always an opportunity to come to that special place inside of me, which I would like to call the sacred space. And the wisdom traditions all over speak about it. In Sanskrit, you would call it the Dahara Akash, the sky in the heart. Once we come there, to that place, we contact a place of intuitive knowing, a place of bliss, I would say, and a release. When you come to this place, you don't have to become anything or anyone any longer. You don't have to make an effort. No, you are connecting with a wellspring that is right inside of you, an inexhaustible fountain right inside of you, of insight, of knowledge, of bliss, and so on. Because it's a treasure which all of us have, but we often have, let us say, lost the exact knowledge how to gain access. So we are not importing something in meditation, a peaceful state. No, we're discovering an original state which is already there. The meditation which I would love to do with all of you today is called the Divine Smile Meditation. I first got to know this meditation when I was invited to be there in a conference, and one Buddhistic monk, he was really from right out there from the desert of Mongolia or wherever, really a hardcore monk, not an edited monk. He sat down with his translator and he led us into a beautiful meditation that ended with us having to meditate on the enigmatic smile of Buddha. I think you all have seen Buddha statues, and you have always wondered how peaceful he sits there, and his joyfulness is almost infectious. His silent joy, so to say, that reaches our heart. So I was impressed when I did this, but I wondered, is that also in my tradition? And I did discover in the ancient texts of the Bhagavatam a nice verse which I have written down for you here. It says, one should meditate on the most generous smile of Lord Hari. It's a smile that drives away the fears of all those who offer their homage unto him. You know, this smile is infectious. It is effective. It drives away our fears, or if you would like to express it in a modern way, our insecurities, our being ill at ease with ourselves and our situation. As I said, it's an infectious smile. And don't we all know, that sometimes we come alive when someone smiles at us. Now imagine, and that's what we are going to do in this meditation, the all blissful one, the one with thousand names, smiles at you. Wow, that's a smile which is different from the smile of Marilyn Monroe or who else? Anyone, Donald Trump or someone. It's more effective, really. It is the supreme smile, if you so want. Okay, enough of introduction. We want to now become blissful in this meditation. We want to actually become deeply affected. I would like to start with all of you. Please, it's now the time to put multitasking aside. Your bag of chips, please put it to the side if it is there. Your mobile telephone, if you can write down, I'm deeply meditating now, please come back to me later. Whatever it is, put aside now and let us center ourselves by sitting straight. Find a comfortable position that offers you some steadiness so that you don't have to fidget around. Just steady sitting position. Let us for a moment take note of what is going on around us. You could look around in your room, and without sticking to any particular image, just take note. Be a neutral observer, almost like a video camera, which simply takes in what is there in the room or in the environment where you are at the moment. Focus now your attention on the sounds. Where I am, there are many birds chirping. Where you are, there may be an alarm just going off. Whatever the sound is, just take note. Listen. When you are ready, please close your eyes. And observe your breath. Your breath is always with you. When you observe it and start to just notice it, your breath will act as a vehicle that brings you inside. In and out. Most of us, because of sitting so much or being under stress or maybe situations where we don't express our emotions freely, we have a very arrested breath, shallow. Let us lengthen the breath now. Breathe in and out as I continue talking to you. And lengthen your breath by exhaling a little bit longer than you usually do. Go a little over the edge where you normally stop exhaling. You will see how this lengthening, willful lengthening of your outgoing breath will increase the length of your incoming breath. If your mind wanders, as it naturally does, bring it back. Let it settle on your in and outgoing breath. And as your mind settles on simply breathing, you will notice that you calm down. Stay alert, but allow your whole system to calm down by settling on your breath. Now, we request you to breathe into the area of your heart. Imagine you breathe in through your chest into your heart. Deep inhale. And whenever the time comes to exhale, exhale through the heart. As you breathe in through your heart, feel how it expands. Feel how a natural joyfulness fills the space, the heart space. Tell yourself, I'm pure awareness. I'm eternal and full of loving awareness. Breathe in and out through your heart. Connect with yourself. Pure awareness, loving awareness. Now connect the Supreme. And let the image of a divine smile arise. Meditate on that smile, which is full of abundance, grace, and acceptance. A welcoming, reassuring smile. Happy to see you back. a welcoming, reassuring smile. Meditate on that smile. A smile that bestows benedictions. The smile of God. Let the divine smile pervade your entire being, almost like sun rays that expand. And as you continue breathing in a natural flow, let that smile enliven your whole being. Let it heal the restlessness, the insecurity of whatever needs to be healed. You can always visit that space. Allow yourself to answer to the call. For now, we will exit out of this meditation by chanting with our outgoing breath a very powerful mantra. It only has one syllable. It's a seed mantra from which so much can grow. It's the mantra Ram. I will intonate it first alone, then I will request you to make a deep inhale, and on the exhale, I request you to chant Ram from a deep place within yourself. A deep inhale, and everyone. If we are standing with Raghunath on the stage, inhale. Ram. Please give yourself now time to come back to room awareness. You may slowly open your eyes, breathe, look around. And never forget, the divine smile is only an inch away, and it can drive away everything that is bothering you very easily. It can smile it away. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maharaj. I tell you, I felt like I was hypnotized.
I watched you, Raghunath, because you are the only big image. There are small windows up there, but you're the big image. And I thought, oh, no. You have an attractive smile. Look at this, the smile of this man. And you feel immediately inspired. Yes. No. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's when you do it, the elements are very simple. You sit down straight. You can also open your body a little by rolling the shoulders back. That's the first thing. Then center yourself by just being a little bit aware, taking in sounds or whatever. And then slowly close down. And the way to do it is just settle into your breath. It's the one thing which was there when you were born, you started to breathe at that moment. Usually you had not the Ram mantra, but the Ah mantra. And it will be the last thing you do when you are, as you are in this body. You will leave the body with an exhaling breath, mostly. But we are not aware of that. So by becoming aware of the breathing, the breath is the rider of attention, and you are the horse of attention. You put your attention there on the breath, and whoop, it starts to move, and boop, it shifts. If you don't do multitasking, of course, at the same time, then you just come into the heart area, and from there you can go in many areas. It's the space where everything is resting, where everything is there. It is a space of vastness, the sacred space. And this time we meditated on the divine smile. Thank you. It's a pleasure to share with you what is so dear to me. I guess we will now enter the question and answer session. Has something appeared, Raghunath, in the comment session? If you are not yet written, now it's time to let your fingers run and gallop over the keyboard of your device and send in a question.
Yeah, please, you can send it to me privately if you like, on the chat board. I'd like to start with the question, Maharaj. I was doing this, and this question came to me while mowing the lawn this morning. I was thinking, you know, Maharaj, you know, I'm always struggling in my bhakti, and I'm always, you know, got into it many years ago, but distracted in so many ways. So many ways I can list, been distracted. Then I get very focused, then I get distracted. Then I get very focused, and years change, decades change. And then I look at you, and your path was different. You were on, like, the speedboat. I was on like the sailboat that goes up and down and up, and you've been on like the sort of the jet ski of spiritual life, where you don't look back, you just keep going in a straight line. And I'm trying to think, well, how am I supposed to do it in this life? How am I supposed to pull it off in this life with all these distractions? And it's like, how many years do I possibly even have left? Or should I just resign to the fact that I have to come back and take birth again on a later date in Kali Yuga? How to tighten it all up within the confines of family, business, being in the material world. Is there hope? Is there hope for the rest of us, Maharaj? Or must I give up everything and just get on that jet ski with you straight to spiritual life? Can you help us?
I will try, but you are so always so open, and yes, this is a very profound question which may affect all of us from time to time. Now, first of all, I would like to say we all have different roles to play in this life. It depends entirely with what intention we are playing this role. For instance, since I know you in Vrindavan, I have seen a lively person. Then I was invited to your charismatic shelter shows, and I saw you really capturing the interest of many people. And I saw this Raghunath is most probably not a contemplative monk. he is a person who can induce others and inspire others, move others. And I think you're playing this role out very nice. Now, you could do that with a good intention, or you could do it to just for your name, fame, and glory, or for making money, or whatever. Just like a monk, he could also play his role with an intention that is totally wrong. He could to get most clicks on the Facebook, or you know, to maybe make a lot of money, to build himself a comfortable home and house. Or usually it's these subtle things, you know, recognition, acknowledgement by others, and that would ruin everything. So I think we should stop really judging or assessing people by their outward role. We should look into the heart to find the intention. And you know what? Krishna does not look at the outward role. He looks at the intention. And there are so many stories of kings who had a wonderful intention. There was once a renunciant coming to a king and staying in his palace for 2 weeks. And at the end of his stay, he came to the king and said, "How will you ever get to the kingdom of God? You have so much opulence. You have every day such good food. You are so attached." The king, hearing this, jumped from his throne, grabbed the shawl of the monk, the renunciant, shawl, ran to the fireplace and threw it into the fire. The monk said, "Oh no, you burned my only possession, my very nice Kashmiri wool shawl. Oh no." And the king said, "See, your attachment is still there. I do this role of being a king only to see that people can grow and have safety in my kingdom. But so often I have desired to walk out from here and into the forest. But I do it. It's a different duty." So I feel we need to see what is the intention of a person, and what would we do with people, without people like you, who can reach out, who can cook up a storm in a little big club in Berlin called SOS, Save Our Souls, and who yells on the stage, I need your shelter, and so on. I have learned this line. It's a very good line. We need all of us, and we need to work together according to our talents. And all we have to work on, or what we have to work on, is our intention. And there is where the work needs to be done. This is seen by the ones we care about most. And this will be the GPS, the guiding system through our life, which will tell us how to avoid the wrong path and go on the right path. And this is, this is my answer. That's the first part of the answer. But the second part is, of course, in our practice and during our practice, we need to come to the level of absorption. If we only see, neuroscience tells this so nicely. We always go back into the same circuits, so to say, or same thought patterns, same habits. And if we want to break them, we need to create something new, which happens at the time of absorption. We create new circuits. On this level, we can say neurons that fire together, wire together, connect. So our patterns, which are, you know, our wiring, our inside, is that a proper English word? The way we are wired, no? That have to be created new if we want to have a substantial spiritual experience. And for that we have to see how in the practice which we do, we can obtain, let us say, the level of absorption. This is all what I have become about, to do whatever I do with full absorption. And this has made a young rebel, that is how I started, into a content old man.
Maharaj is beautiful. Thank you. Jimuna Jaya, who's listening, wants to know if the meditation, like you just did, do you do that before you chant japa, or do you do it throughout the day, or do you do it with a group?
Yes, I think when you do meditation, the type of meditation which you choose is optional. Like this one, I do it, let us say, I like to do this often, but I do it within the part of all my practice, you know. When I chant, I chant, and then when I go into the Gayatri meditation, then before that, or during the Gayatri mantra, especially the last line, I see the divine. I see the divine smile, as it is stated in this Bhagavatam quote, which I read to you. It is really optional, but although the different types of meditations are optional, and I by no means suggest that that this needs to be done, this particular one needs to be done. The meditation as a practice of deep absorption or immersion, that is the way you create a better version of yourself. That is not that you just do. You can do it in japa meditation, for instance, when you absorb yourself while you do japa. How to do that? Well, you just make it a point to settle with the mantra. It's a beautiful image given. When you want to train a falcon, you know, these birds which can, if you want to train it, you need to fasten it to a perch. So in the beginning, the falcon will flutter here and there, but finally it will come to rest at the very place it is fastened to, that is the perch. In the same way, you bring your mind to the mantra. You tie it there, you connect it there, you are with the mantra. In the beginning it will flutter here and there and go, oh no, my shopping list, did I do this? And oh no, I need to buy a new handy, oh no, and what else? Oh, I have forgotten to email to that person who will get mad at me. You know, the everyday gossip which goes on in the mind. But no, when you do mantra meditation, you bring your mind to what is going on right now. When you chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, so it's Hare, then Krishna, then Hare. And as you allow your mind to really settle like that restless bird on the perch of the mantra, now you will find how the mantra takes you somewhere like a fast train or a speedboat, if you want to use that example. But you need to connect it. You can't have a spiritual practice here and your mind is in Alaska. You need to bring them together. And that is an art which I think you can do by what you can call active listening. No, just like you listen to a person, you want to find out everything, you listen to the mantra and it will take you away from the restless mind to the deep mind. Like I can see, I only see Raghunath now very clearly, but I see after that meditation, you look much more peaceful. I can see that. It is visible. And what happened? You have different neurons firing now. Maybe in a moment you will come like the jack out of the box. We can never guarantee our Raghunath is full of energy. But it works. It is not some imagination. It does something to us.
Beautiful answer. Thank you, Maharaj. You know, Lynn McDougall, one of our listeners who was lived in a Buddhist ashram for some time, she asked the question, what tips do you have to help maintain every minute meditation in our daily lives? How do you keep the mind meditating on a moment-to-moment basis?
Yeah. In brief, in very brief, this is, you could also ask, how do I rewire myself? It is a process. It takes time. But I would like to introduce to you a simple model which I teach at the end of my retreats. It's called the GROW model. GROW as an acronym. G means first, become aware that this is your goal, that you want to do this, that you really want to do this. It should not be a wish which you just have here and there and so on. You should focus a little bit to make it a primary project. Then the next thing is, and I find this so important, the G is for goal. Now we come to the next, the R. R stands for reality. Look, what is your present situation? Accept it as it is. Don't judge yourself, but just look. Are you chronically distracted, or are you distracted only when there is a trigger coming up and you can't deal with it? Just find out the reality of your present situation. It's not enough to just have high goals if you totally ignore where you are at the present moment. The next letter of this acronym, GROW, is the O. Study your opportunities. What do you have? Can you lengthen your practice? Can you, during the day, for instance, stop for a moment and again do this practice? That is what I do. You know, I have on my telephone, which at the moment doesn't work, but I have a receiver. I have an old-style telephone. I have to pick it up and then put it on the ear. And on the telephone, I have chant while you do your other things. Everything else will be taken away at the moment of death. So every time it rings, I have this chant while you do your other things, and then only I think take the foolish thing to my ear. So your opportunities, your options that you can do, what you can do. And finally, that is willingness in this model. Willingness to make changes, wherever it needs to make changes. Most of us become distracted when there are triggers. For instance, a difficult situation, or a person who just gets on your nerves, or something, or you become overloaded with things to do while you work on your computer, emails, this and that. Identify the triggers and then be willing to be there at the moment with your opportunities. What can I do now? And in this way, slowly, slowly, you create, yes, I like to say it, the better version of yourself, of which you naturally long, which you naturally want to maintain, because it's just more you than the lesser version of yourself, where you are operating in shrunken consciousness. You want to go in a vastness, where you are together with the self, together with, if you are like me, together with Krishna. You know, you want to expand your consciousness. So learn to do this when the triggers come, and that you will only be able to do if you have identified your opportunities, your options, that which you can do, and that you will only do when you have a willingness to change. So, if you want to write this down, grow. G for becoming aware of the goals, R for making a reality check, no? O for your opportunities, and V, most important, your willingness to change. It should not be lip deep, it should be heart deep, that willingness to change, and then it will happen. Don't worry. Just for you to ask such a question means you have already done the major job. You are already aware that change is standing before your door and you want to let it in. Now just try this and so on. What has helped me is to always stop when I see this is not going where I want it to go. Go back, look at it, and put something better there than your usual reaction, which brings you to a place you really don't want to go any longer. Thank you.
Beautiful. Marsh, so many questions are coming in, you can't even answer them all, but this one has been, a few people have written this one in. It says, Maharaj, how did you find your calling in life, and how can we find ours? Sometimes we're working a job and we don't even know why we're working a job. We're just sort of pushed into a job and we're having second thoughts about who our boss is, who we're working so hard for, who we're giving our heart for, who we're giving our mind to, our words to, our energy to. How did you find your calling, Maharaj, and how can we start to find what our calling is?
Another question which I deal with in 1 week seminars, but for you here, something that works very quickly, because we want to have something which sets us on the right path. I would say, look for only one thing, that is your talent. I'm here not so sure of the English language. Talent in German, das dein Talent, indicates something which is given to you, not something which you have learned. It's a gift. Find out your talent or a gift. I would like to give you an answer, an example, a personal example. My father had 5,000 people working under him. He really needed a structure to reach everyone. And then a huge operation behind these 5,000. And he wanted me to become a CEO, manager. But I don't belong to the manager sect. I'm not good in that at all. I think watching our Raghunath, you were good with managers together, I think. So I somehow, I tried to get into this. I was at a very good school where really those type of people go who are making $1 million in a second, you know, and so on. And I noticed I'm best really not when I push around resources and make them work in the best way, or push around people. No, I'm good when I can inspire someone, when I can, and then I did meet my spiritual master, and he saw that also, and he said, "You should become someone like me." Then I thought, never, never, never. I mean, he didn't mean I should become a saint. That is him. But he meant like someone who helps people and find their path and helps them to develop their potential. And just maybe 2 years back, something dawned on me. See, my father had built, amongst other things, big bridges and tunnels also under the sea, what is called in English, Baltic Sea, for instance, and so on. And so I was sitting with this healer. He had some very effective way of dealing with a stomach problem which I had, and he then asked me, "So, what's your father doing?" And I said a little bit, then he said, "But you are also a bridge builder, like your father. You build other bridges," and that all came only about that I could do something, maybe something, some small efforts, because I discovered my talent. And do you know what happens when you then act upon your talent? You all of a sudden notice that you seem to be connected with a total different system than this miserable system where everything is dependent on your efforts, on you being cleverer, looking more good than others, being able to make that shortcut before everyone else, and so on. You seem to enter a space of effortless achievement. Sounds here not like the right word, but effortless getting what you crave for and much, much more. Because more tears are cried by people who reach their goals than the tears which people cry who don't reach their, let me add the word, foolish goals. We sometimes have foolish goals and not the right goals. So you are cared for. You're sitting in a boat of universal care. It's you are connected with what is called dharma, the eternal principle which guides everything, the divine order, the cosmic law, dharma, no? Dharma. For instance, I tell you, I saw our Raghunath. You see, I share a great affection for our man behind the camera on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. I saw him last time in that SOS club, Save Our Soul.
It's called SO36 in Berlin.
Yes, yes, yes.
Town.
Yes. And he was putting a nice mood into the hall. There was solid beats, and Paramananda has played an electric guitar, and then Raghunath jumped here and there. I thought, well, is he an acrobat? And so on. And then he came to me in one little, you know, between two songs, there's a little pause when the band rearranges or when they give us a little pause and so on. And he came to me panting and he said, Maharaj, I'm thinking I'm getting too old for this. I saw this I only could smile because everything was so exciting, you know, and so on. But in my mind I thought, no, you're not. You're an inspirer. That's your dharma. Maybe you do not need, this particular setting, but you also, this is good, then you do some good sweating and reduce the fat proportions in the body and so on. So, so good. But the dharma is inspiration, giving inspiration. And if you do it through song or whatever, so you find your talent, and if it's difficult, meet some good friends and ask them this question. Please give me a feedback. When do you think I come alive? What is it when I come alive? And most probably, the answer of a few ones will give you an idea where you can look for that talent, which is really another word of being in your dharma. It's a modern word. It's something where we can all start. But
feel alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's a great answer. We should feel like this is what I do naturally. This is what I was born to do. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It doesn't matter about the form. It might come out for me. It comes out on the stage, and sometimes it'll come out in a podcast. I see with Kostuba, since I've known Kostuba, he's always just sort of been a teacher. It's his sort of, it's dharma, and he's done in so many different manifestations. But yeah, I get that. That's a great answer. How you feel when you feel very alive.
And you will also see, so that is the one circle. Where am I alive? When I feel, when you think of your talent or your dharma or your purpose, it's something you cannot think not doing. You have to do it. It's you. It comes like the sweat from your human body, you know. It's so connected with you. Or like our Kostuba. Kostuba is a Brahmin, a Pandit. Always has been. And he's always extremely effective also. I just spoke of 2 days ago, about 3 days ago, with one person he has deeply affected. This person has now really makes so much money that he needs a barrel, a wheelbarrow to bring it home, you know. And and it was Kostuba who told him what to do. Kostuba may be a poor Brahmana, but he had the right idea, because that is what he does. He is a pandit, he is a teacher, and so on. And you are also a teacher, but very much in the inspiring capacity. It's so inspiring to see you, to hear your good voice even. It is immediately inspiring.
Right. Oh, Maharaj, questions are going out of control, but we'd have to make it a one-day retreat with you. But a new student of ours has a great question. It says, I'm new to the bhakti path, about 3 months. I read the Gita. I've stopped eating meat. It's pretty impressive. I read the Gita, stopped eating meat. I chant japa every day, and I listen to wisdom of the sages daily. I participate in a sangha every Sunday and Tuesday. I have recently received this Bhagavatam in the mail. How do you suggest I continue to progress? What else can you do?
Very, very nice. Congratulations. While not all who listen to wisdom of the sages choose to go this type of path, you have chosen this. And your question is actually a traditional question. It's dealt with in one work, which is translated as the Nectar of the Bhagavatam. And there we find one Brahmana who is asking the question that I've done this. He has a long list, meditation, the Shastra study of scriptures and so on. What do I still lack? What do I still need? And the answer which is given there by, his name is Swarup, or also previously known as Gop Kumar, is you need to only do one thing. And this one thing is what I discover, but also what I found in the scripture. You need to chant with a mind that is ekagra, it means one-pointed, the divine mantra. So my answer to you, maybe you chant already mantras, but the point which you still may miss is to do it with full absorption, or the Sanskrit word is ekagra. It comes up again and again. Eka means one, ekagra means one single focus. The moment you do this, you will see the realizations blazing forth. It's almost like when the, diffuse rays of light are bundled through a magnifying glass, and you put now the concentrated ray, no longer it's diffuse, it's now concentrated through the magnifying glass on something dry, it incinerates it. This ekagra, this one-pointed attention, is really powerful.
My landline rang while you were talking. Glad I was muted. It wouldn't stop ringing. Maharaj, that was beautiful. And it's amazing to have you on this second... that's our wind-up music. Maharaj, we want to thank you on behalf of Wisdom of the Sages and this very, very sincere group of... Bhakti practitioners, thank you for giving time. I know people are always, Maharaj travels all over the world. These are thousands and thousands of students to give us this time. It's incredibly valuable. There's no good reason why we deserve that you come and spend all this time with us. And We're sitting here very, very grateful. And just to have a person like you that we can approach and ask these questions to, I wish we had more time. And we petition you with all earnestness that you will come back.
100%. And really, Raghunath and Kostuba, and also your helper, who I don't see at the moment, but he's somewhere on the list, on the line. I want to really say, you leave an effect in the amongst all those spiritual people, and particularly those who are through your wisdom of the sages, which is so open. It is so natural. It is so, the entry is very easy. Made by both of you, the hosts of this, that I have great, great respect. And please call me. Even if I'm sleeping in the night, you may call me. It's a wonderful effort. I congratulate you sincerely for what you do. How do I know? In America, we often say nice words, and we may not even mean them. But Germans also do it. Everyone does it now in the world of insecurity. I hear from those who are with you. I meet sometimes people like Hendrik from Berlin or Nicole from Switzerland, and here and there I meet them, or there was someone from Hamburg I met at one yoga program who listens every day or as much as possible, they are genuinely inspired, and they share what you give, this natural spirituality, this spirituality which is realistic, which is not some imagination, and that is very nice. You can understand the teacher by his students, and you are doing a wonderful work, really wonderful.
And what is the best way to reach you, Maharaj? Thank you, you're very kind. What's the best way if people want to connect with you? What's the best way to stalk you?
I have discovered the world of internet just during this, changing situation in which we are. And I have a Facebook page. Facebook. There I'm quite active. And I think you can write something on the Facebook if you want more personal and so on. Yes.
So if you're hearing this and not, or I guess everyone's seeing this, but it's Sachi Nandana, Sacinan.